Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to Freedomizer Radio. Up next is Brother Gregory with Keys of the Kingdom, and after that, See the Power in You with our special guest today, Tim James Glenn. So stay tuned.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking again about the Kingdom of God. We just finished a series about 21 hours studying the single phrase, resist not evil. And, of course, in our discussions of such topics, we do a lot of what we call rabbit trailing. Rabbits out on the desert, if you scare up a jackrabbit, he'll run out and usually a particular direction, but he'll circle. And if you stay in one place, he'll come back around eventually to where you're at. And he does that because he's got a very low profile, and if he just runs out in a straight line, he literally can get lost. So he circles around and comes back to the beginning, and that's the nature of rabbit trails. And it gives you an orientation around a single concept. But a single concept is like one tiny branch of the tree of the knowledge. And if you're going to depend upon the tree of knowledge, you've got to know where all the branches are. You've got to know where everything is. And generally speaking, people just can't do that. So it's never a good idea to make the tree of knowledge the source of your choices and decisions in life. The tree of knowledge is there for a purpose, but not as a source. It's the tree of life that gives you proper guidance. If you follow the tree of knowledge, you will end up being the blind leading the blind. And the reason I start off with that is that we're now in another series on spirit. If you resist not evil, then what do you follow? And, of course, you follow spirit. If you follow the tree of knowledge, evil will get in and influence you. Because evil is just the result of the absence of total understanding. Anything less than total understanding is going to produce evil. It's like genetic code. If you have a genetic code and you got all the markers of the genetic code in the double helix strand, and you just take out some of it, you're not going to get the same product. You're going to get something different. And it can be very distorted. It can even be toxic. It can be the opposite of life-giving because it's missing something. And evil, the intelligent evil of the universe, will use such methods to destroy. And we talked in the earlier show on spirit about how Jesus came across these people who were possessed of a demon, and the demon knew it, and the demon spoke out to Jesus, and he cast the demons out. But before they did, they says, let us go into these swine instead of casting us into the pit. And he said, let us go into these swine. So they went into the swine. He said, go. He let them go into the swine. They went into the swine, and the swine immediately killed themselves, committed suicide. Why? Because their spirit was a destructive spirit. It was a self-destructive spirit, and actually inhabited the animals rather than go back into the realm where they came from. They want to inhabit something that's alive. And I started telling the story in the last show, and I told it a number of times, an old rancher, he came into the valley on horseback, He's passed away now, but I knew him, worked for him for many years. My son would go along with me when he was just 6 years old, and we would feed with him. And my son always found this old fellow just full of great stories. He said one time to me, he says, that fella, and he named him, he'll remain nameless here, but he says, he can make a trip to the mailbox sound interesting. And he was. He was a good storyteller. He knew how to tell a story. That was because he grew up before TV and radio. And so that's what you did for entertainment. And some people were very good at it, and he was great at it. But he was also very honest, a very honest man. He'd tell you a story, it's true. And it's not always that way with cowboys. there was one famous cowboy who wrote a book out here. I won't mention the book, but I was talking to another old cowboy who knew this guy all his life. And he says, well, everything in that book happened. It just didn't all happen to him. And that was pretty much the way that most of the cowboys looked at his stories. They were true stories. He wasn't always the center of the roping and branding and riding and everything else. But this other fellow, he ran horses and actually mules. He was a mule skinner for one of the largest ranches in the country for a while, among many other things. And so he was quite the horseman, a little bitty man. And he had a team of horses he used for years, and he went into the barn one time to hitch them up. And the one, well, one was way off in the corner, but the other one was standing off by itself, but kind of wild-eyed and come roaring at him, and he'd never seen the horse. I mean, he'd had this horse since it was a little colt. And they come roaring at him, and it reared up to kill him and coming down on him with his hooves. And he hit him, and he knocked him off his feet, and there was a lot of space under the barn door, and he just rolled out underneath the barn door and crawled back home to the house and bandaged himself up, you know, quite a bit. You know, he'd split his leg from, you know, about 8 inches above the knee, just split it wide open with the hoof. And this is a tough old codger, and he bandaged it all up, and this is early in the morning. He didn't get back to the barn till late that evening, but he went back up to the barn, and he's carrying something behind him. He didn't own a baseball bat, but it was probably very similar to a baseball bat. And he walked back into that barn, and he looked over at that horse, and sure enough, it come roaring at him again. And he didn't back away so that the horse could rear up and get him. He stepped forward to the horse, and he laid a Babe Ruth right into the middle of his forehead with that pole. And that horse went down to the ground. He knocked that horse completely out. And he said when it hit the ground, he could hear the air coming out of the horse. Just, and he just turned around and walked back out of the barn. Hobbled back home, ate supper, and went to bed. And he said, I didn't know whether I killed him or not, but I wasn't going to let him do that twice. And so anyway, he come back out the next day, and our horse was in the barn, and it was standing up. There's quite a welt on its head. But it was just as good as that gold. It was it lived the rest of its life and never did anything like that ever again. And, you know, my son listening to the story, small boy, 6-7 years old, and he just thought this was just a fascinating story. And he looked at my son, and he said, I don't know what got into that horse, but I sure as heck knocked it out. And that was basically the story of this horse. But the truth is, I'm a believer. I've seen it too much. Things get into animals just like they got into them swine. And they'll act according to that spirit. And if it's a self-destructive spirit, it will destroy itself. And if it's a destructive spirit, it will try to destroy you. And it will do all kinds of things. It'll have the spirit of abandonment. And we just had a cow that had twins. and it abandoned one of its calves, and then it abandoned the other calf. And we've had animals occasionally come about. They roam pretty free out on the range most of the time, but they know us. We walk amongst them. And we've had animals actually try to kill their own young, actually murder them. I grab them and hold them down and suffocate them. You wouldn't think that animals would do such a thing, but the spirit of something can get into them. And I've told the story, and probably on this show, of a sheep that had done that. It killed its own lamb. We didn't realize it. We thought it was an accident. And then it killed the bummer lamb that we put on it. And we thought, that's quite a coincidence. So we put it where we could keep a really close eye on it. And sure enough, we put another bummer lamb in there, and she tried to kill it. And we stopped that. And we put that sheep off separate from the other sheep. And then we were going to butcher it. And when we go to butcher, we do it the old way, where you slit the throat and bleed the animal out. And we did it with this one, and it bled out into a hole underneath the fruit tree. And I went to get a wheelbarrow to hang it up, and I came back, and it was gone. It had got up and walked away. It had all its blood there in that hole. There was no blood left in that sheep to speak of at all. And it got up and walked away, walked around the house, walked out towards the garden, out towards the road, and was standing there. It had to have been 10, 15 minutes after all its blood was out of its body. That's spooky. That shouldn't be. They're not supposed to be able to do that. You know, we've eaten a lot of sheep and cows over the years. You know, I'm an old guy now, and this is the way we get our meat. We never eat anybody we don't know, personally. So we butcher our own animals, and with the strength that we get from that, we're able to take care of all the rest. That's the kind of relationship you have as a shepherd. But this animal was not natural. Something was in it. And it was important that we understand these things, because now we're dealing with people, and spirits get into people. If you're going to eat of the tree of knowledge, spirits can get into you. And it can make you do a lot of things you wouldn't normally do. It can make you think a lot of things you normally wouldn't think. Crazy things, insane things. You know, next thing you know, you're going to be electing some leader to rule over you, thinking that's a good idea, even though the Bible tells you that's a rejection of God. And you'll think it, and people will show you that, well, wait a minute, this was a rejection of God, and you'll think it's okay. Because you got the spirit of that controlling Cain in you. Because you want to rule over others, you will let somebody rule over you if they will let you rule over others. And you'll be able to create a vast bureaucracy and work your way up in the pecking order of that bureaucracy and rule over your neighbor and take away from your neighbor. You'll be able to do that, and you'll think it's okay. You'll even convince yourself that God says it's okay, because the spirit of that Cain, that Lamech, that Nimrod, dwelleth in you. And you let it dwell in you. Now, if you decide you don't want to let it dwell in you, if you want to have Christ dwell in you, then you have to go back the way you came. That's what repentance means. Turn around and go back the way you came. You accepted a spirit into your body, into your mind, into your heart, into that physical fleshy temple that you live in. That's what you are. You're a temple. Your bones are the structure of the tent of the temple, and the skin is stretched over that, and in there there's things like organs and hearts and livers, and they're doing their thing according to the spirits that dwell in you, in your temple. And if you let in spirits that are not of God, then you will let in spirits that may want to devour you or destroy you or get you to devour others. And you'll think it's okay. You'll think it's good to do those things. You will call evil good. And then you'll even call good evil. And you won't know the difference. You see, because you've been eating of the tree of knowledge and you let evil spirits dwell in you. Maybe they dwell in a little dark place in your heart somewhere and they just whisper to you. Or maybe, you know, I mean, all possession and all influence of evil isn't like the movie The Exorcist. You don't have to look wild-eyed and crazy and screaming and yelling and floating over the bed and all that stuff like they do in the movies. You can just get a couple of ideas that lead you down a pathway to destruction. You know, you might think, well, let's start a Federal Reserve on Christmas Eve. You might think some crazy thought like that. Let's give some people we don't even know the power to control everything that we have that is of value until we have nothing of value, and we'll give them the power to do that and bring us into debt and bondage for the rest of our lives so that we will all be in bondage. Let's do that. You'll think that, and you'll think it's a good idea because you'll be all distracted by other things that get into your mind because you're sitting over here on your Christmas tree branch, and meanwhile, they're robbing you blind over here in the rest of the tree. And as long as you can have your Christmas tree, you think you're okay, you know, because it feels good. And you have a little of that Christmas punch and, you know, watch a little bit of the game, and you think everything's okay, although your whole nation is trillion dollars in debt. And we talked about that in one of the last shows. You were $17 trillion in debt now, and the last president, you were $11 trillion in debt, and the president before that, you were $6 trillion in debt, and the president before that, you finally made it to $1 trillion because, you know, about a president before that, I think it was you were only like $400 billion in debt. But now you didn't just quadruple that. You didn't do 17 times that. You're thousands of percent more in debt than you've ever been before when you were born. And your children that are being born now, they're going to be even more in debt. And you think it's going to keep on going. Not going to happen. But that's because the spirit has gotten into your society through every individual in your society that it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods. And so we're always back to that. Because that's one of the major turning points away from life is that you have to be covetous. You also have to be unforgiving. You also can't be courageous. You have to be fearful. You know, so now if I talk about, you know, economic collapse, you get fearful. That's not why I'm talking about it. I don't want you fearful. Fearful just makes you jump from branch to branch in the tree of knowledge. It doesn't get you close to the spirit. So when I talk about all the different things where I'm constantly in, and I beg everybody's pardon, but it's my job. I have to do it. I'm constantly tearing down what people believe and what people think is so. And it just ain't so. Because that's one of the major problems, is you think a lot of things that just ain't so. You know, like a lot of you people think that you've been baptized and, you know, you've received the baptism of Jesus Christ. Nothing could be farther from the truth. Somebody said some words and somebody dunked some water, but And maybe even the people that did that, they think they believe in Christ, but they actually don't know Christ. Oh, they get emotional and they get all excited about it and everything, and they get a really good feeling inside, but they really don't know Christ. And you can tell that yourself because they don't really love Christ. Because if they loved him, they would be keeping his commandments, and they're not. I mean, it's not hard to figure out. I mean, his commandments, including, you know, not coveting your neighbor's goods, and everybody does that. They all want benefits from men who exercise authority one over the other and call themselves benefactors. Free school, free education, they all want those things. But Jesus says you are not to be that way, so they're going against the words of Jesus. But they say they love him. But you know they don't, because if they loved him, they would keep his word. And they're not. They're doing the opposite. Not just in this country, but in countries all around the world. I'm not in this country. I'm on the planet. I'm not of the world, but I'm on the planet. I don't want those benefits. I don't want those gifts, gratuities, and benefits, because I know they're the destroyers of liberty. And they cut me off from the flow of life. And I don't want to be cut off from the flow of life. So I repent of the desire for such benefits, and I return to the house of the Father, and now I'm obliged to preach to you that the kingdom of God is at hand, within your reach. You don't have to wait for it. It's here. If you have to wait, it's because you're holding back. It's not because God's holding back. But you've gone out of the way, and you've gone opposite the way that Christ said, and so therefore you need to repent and turn around and head back and strive to do so. So anyway, I wrote something called The New Deal, and it's in the book Thy Kingdom Comes. It's part of one of the chapters. And it talks about Herod's plan for the kingdom of God. You see, because he thought he was the king of the kingdom of God, the king of Judea, which was, to him was the kingdom of God. And he contrived to obtain at least 600,000 members in this kingdom. Why 600,000? Well, he was going to need that much money to come in order to, and it had to be big enough to cover all the expenses. And he called it New Israel. And it was to be the kingdom of heaven, or the kingdom of God on earth. And it was a political project because it dealt with people and it dealt with power. And that's what politics deals with, which we covered in the last show. Politics is about the division of power. You can divide the power between three branches of government, or you can give the power back to the people. And they have the power, but if they're going to have the power, they have to have the responsibility to tend to the daily ministration. That's what Christ did. He gave you back the power, and with that, the right and responsibility to tend to the daily ministration, the needy of your society. Yourself, you had to do it. You had to tend to what Jesus called the weightier matters. Modern churches don't do any of that. But anyway, Herod's plan, this grand scheme, this vast worldwide membership that he was looking for, it involved a certain amount of evangelizing of the people to get them to sign up, because they had to sign up for this scheme. They had to become participants, members of this system of social welfare. And the Jews, normally when they signed up, they had the process of baptism. They washed up like they did at Mount Sinai. That's why they had the laver there outside the temple. The washing was a big part of their tradition. Now, but Herod wasn't going to stop there. He also built the Temple of Roma, because they didn't have that policy. So he had another way. But in both cases, they had to sign up. If you would not sign up, you were called idiotis, unregistered. And that's very important. We wrote an article, Are Christians Idiots? And we explained that. It's a bait and switch title. But Christians wouldn't sign up. Why wouldn't they sign up for Herod's scheme? Because Herod's scheme was based on exercising authorities, powers, men in power. You'd be recorded with the scribes, and you'd be put on a roster, and you would have to pay in according to whatever was required by, you know, the Sanhedrin statutory limits. You know, if you were really wealthy, you were supposed to pay in more, and if you were really poor, you paid in less. But everybody had to pay in something. And it was usually based on how much you made, and it was usually based around 10%, although they had extra fees that they would add on. It was just a system of taxation. But they actually would send out men to pace off. You know, if you grew wheat, they would pace off your field and estimate how much wheat was growing there. And they would expect to see that paid in to them, to go into what they called the treasury. There's two words you see in the New Testament translated treasury. One is a kind of gastophone, and that's a Greek word. But the other one is actually a Hebrew word, and it's translated treasury. But it also appears just as the word Corban. Corban actually means sacrifice. It doesn't mean treasury, but it's your sacrifices that went into the treasury. And this is what his scheme involved, to fill the treasury with compelled offerings, not free will offerings. It's free will to sign up, but once you sign up, you had to pay in. You could be fined and penalized if you didn't pay in enough. And this is no different. This is the same as the system of Corban that was now set up in Rome. Originally, Rome's system was free will offerings, but, you know, after the proconsuls came in, they started doing a little bit more, you know, where there was a kind of a compelled offering. But under Augustus Caesar, it was very compelled. But under Augustus Caesar, it wasn't very much that you were compelled to pay. It started out very small, kind of like your Social Security system. I mean, you used to pay less than 2%. That's all you had to pay. And I think it was like 1.5% or something at first. You know, and then it got up to 3%. But, you know, that's not very much, 3%. But then it got higher and higher. And right now, if you're self-employed, you're paying over 14%. And that's just the Social Security. What most people don't know is the Social Security number is also your federal employee identification number. And so, therefore, you now become a federal employee, and they can also charge an income tax on your wages. And so that's how that all got started, and we explain all that elsewhere, and that's not really what the program is about. What we're going to be talking about is the spiritual aspect of this and how, you see, the problems of the world today are the symptoms of the cause of the problems. What you see, what you're identifying as the problems of the world today, everything from GMOs to overtaxation to inflation, which is just another form of taxation, all these problems have a spiritual origin. You see, you are created in the image of God. You create the world around you. You create the atmosphere around you. You open the door to ideas. You open the door to spirits, to a spirit of how things should be done. And when you open one door, another door closes. You can't see through that door. It may still be open, but you can't even see it because you've gone through this door, and now you can't see that door. So you can't see what is virtuous anymore. You can only see where you're at. You're looking at the world from a place that is inside a realm you should have never entered into. So anyway, this is how Herod had enough money to build the Golden Temple. As he did this, and I quote several different books, Jesus and the Riddle of the Dead Sea Scrolls with Barbara Thering. And she has a lot of different ideas from her studies that are not necessarily so. But we also quote Jesus within Judaism and Jesus, the evidence, by Ian Wilson. That was written, you know, about 14 years ago. The Old Testament World by John Robertson. We quote a lot of these people, but one of the things we wanted everybody to understand is that we don't quote these people so that we create an authority in your mind. We are trying to undo the bondage of what you already believe to be true. Because you think it's this way, it's not. You will keep going the wrong way. And see, you've all gone the broad way. And it's a little different. I mean, some of you are Methodists and Presbyterians and Catholics and Jehovah's Witnesses or Buddhists or New Agers or whatever. But if you're not going in the way of righteousness, you're going the wrong way. Narrow is the way. And if you go the wrong way, there's all kinds of pitfalls. Quicksand and cliffs and beasties waiting for you and you're in trouble. And you're going all these ways because you've been eating of the tree of knowledge. And you need to eat of this tree of life, the tree of the Holy Spirit. And we're going to talk about how to do that, how to find that fruit to eat of when we come back after this short break. We'll be right back.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host, Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
There's a wonderful website to find out about flu vaccines and other information and to report vaccine-related reactions, V-A-E-R-S. So please go and check out that information.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
Hello, Freedomizers. This is Ron from Ron's Media Matrix. We've moved to a new time slot here on Freedomizer Radio. Our show will now be broadcast every Friday from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. As always, we'll have an interesting lineup of guests, including independent musical artists, authors, speakers, and even some of the more controversial internet celebrities. We'll also be covering groundbreaking news from the internet, along with lots of lively dialogue from our callers. Remember, that's Ron's Media Matrix every Friday from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time right here on Freedomizer Radio. Be sure to check us out at www.freedomizerradio.com or you can call in or listen by phone at 347-324-3704. Once again, that's 347-324-3704. Be sure to tune in.
Thank you for listening to Freedomizer Radio. This is Jen Coffey, your host of the Knives, Lipstick, and Liberty Show. Join the conversation every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. This is Jen Coffey, thanking you for listening to FreedomizerRadio.com.
Okay, well, thank you all for tuning in to Freedomizer Radio, and we're back live with Brother Gregory.
Well, welcome back. So, how do you find the tree of life, and what is the tree of life? Well, I equate it with the Holy Spirit. It's not really a tree. You know, it doesn't have leaves. It doesn't shed its leaves. It's not a conifer, you know, hardwood or whatever. It's a source. Trees were sources of materials, of life. They had fruits, they had nuts, they had wood. They could provide for a fire. So the word tree in the Hebrew was actually a source. And that's why they equate it with that. It was alive. It was renewing. It was a source. It pulled energy from deep inside the ground to its roots, and it created things of value. And, you know, everything from shade to food to shelter. So that's what a tree is. So when they talk about a tree of knowledge, you know, I saw an artist one time draw a picture of of someone's head, and you can kind of see in the head, and in the head it looked like there was a brain, but when you look closer it also looked like a tree, you know, with the spinal column being the trunk, and the nervous system in the person being the roots, and then all the dendrites and everything. And if you look at medical books showing you how the brain is constructed, it looks like branches. And that's what the tree of knowledge is. It's your own mind. It's your own thinking. But Christ said, blessed are those who know not by it, because flesh and blood has revealed it, but the Father in heaven has revealed it. That Father in heaven reveals through the Spirit. And through that Spirit, he writes upon your heart and upon your mind. And right now, you're writing upon your mind. You know, you think of something you want to say, actually, or you hear somebody say something, you immediately begin to answer and come back with an answer, and the answer's coming out, and you don't even know what the end of the sentence or paragraph's going to be, and you already started it. Well, deep down inside yourself, you already know where you're going. You haven't did it yet on the screen of your mind. It's just coming out of you. Well, something's projecting it. And if you were the only thing inside of you, that would be you projecting it. But you're in there and you're not alone. There are dark places inside you that you don't go and look. You don't bring light into those rooms inside your being. I mean, the psychiatrists always talk about, you know, suppressed memories and hidden this and hidden that. They're actually delving in an area a lot of times they're ill-equipped to delve in. Because this is a spiritual place inside you. And in these places, these suppressed memories and places you don't want to go, other things can influence you. They can influence your thinking. They can project ideas on the screen of your mind, and you think that's you projecting them. You're not looking at the guy behind the projector. Because in order to see him, you have to see you, because you have to go into the dark places of your heart and your mind. And you don't want to go in there. So when you don't go in, that room stays dark, and evil loves working from the dark. So the key is you have to go into the dark places of your mind and in your spirit and see what's there. You have to go in, though, with light. Now, how do you get the light? Well, the light comes from the tree of life, from God. How do you get closer to God to get that light to take into those dark places? And that's, you have to follow the ways of Christ. You have to be giving and forgiving. You have to come to serve. You have to sacrifice yourself for somebody else, not just for yourself. And if you start doing that, that will draw you near, because that word Corban that we saw translated treasury in the Bible actually is from the word sacrifice. So, and the word sacrifice comes from the word to draw near, because that's how you draw near. You become like Christ, and you will find that difficult. And when you find that difficult, then you have to fast from sloth, from avarice, and continue. Strive. That's the striving part. You're not going to be able to do it on your own, but as you draw near, you can start to receive the power. You know, it's kind of like Superman. You know, if he gets near kryptonite, he gets weak. But if he gets near the sun, he gets strong. So if you get near the Son of God by going his way, you will be strengthened. And you become a Superman. But first you have to become a man. You have to become a member of mankind instead of following the ways of evil. And when you do that, it will change you. It will alter you. And you will be changed. You can't do it on your own. You're going to need help. But how do you get that help? Is that you seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Now, that doesn't mean seek some religious doctrine that you memorize. You know, we had Jehovah's Witnesses come to visit us today. But they didn't come visit me. They were on the place. They talked to other people, but it wasn't a regular guy, but, I mean, their mind is just closed off. And it's not that way with all of them, but this particular guy, his mind is just closed off. When you talk with him, he does not hear anything you say. He only parrots back what he has memorized and been taught. You don't actually converse with him. He spews at you what is already in his mind. And that's why I bring up facts like Herod was baptizing people into the kingdom of heaven. He just had a version of kingdom of heaven different than yours. Now, some people that want to have more sources than I gave in the book. And really, there aren't a lot of other sources. There are some, and I could go and research them out. And I actually have some others. Because if you read on in her book where she says the missionaries with their leather wallets full of white stones would come back with the same wallets full of money in foreign currency once put into the Jewish currency by the money changers, which were the porters of the temple, it would be stored in vaults ready to be used by Herod for his vast building projects or any subsequent causes. Well, that's what Herod had, was these vast building, built the temple. And he put all this gold and everything in the temple. People liked that because they knew, well, that gold is there where we can see it. Then we know there's still money. Nobody stole the money, and it's still there for us in our social security, in our welfare, in our need, when we get old and have a need. You see, and that's what they were setting up, that the temple would take care of you. And this was what they call Corban. This is the way the Romans did it. This is the way Herod was doing it, because he was really more Roman than he was Jew. He was actually an Edomite, but, you know, he had the idea and spirit of Rome more, or what Rome had become. Because there were a lot of Romans who didn't want to go that way, didn't want to go to benefactors exercise authority. They wanted to maintain their responsibility because they knew that unless they do that, they couldn't maintain their rights. And, of course, many of them became Christians because this was the gospel. Herod's scheme of initiation into this new form of Judaism was immensely successful. Jews everywhere were willing to join this worldwide society whose meetings were held in the evenings, in often in private homes. Anything was for entry into the meetings was for members only, and you had to prove your membership by showing this white stone to identify you if you were not already well known to them. But where they got their actual benefits, you know, like the free bread and stuff like that, that would be necessary if you fell on hard times, would be at what they called the assemblies, at the synagogues. And it would be passed out through these local congregations. Because it was all congregations of congregations. We just had a discussion on the network about congregations. There's several different words in the Hebrew that are translated congregation or assembly. And the same with the Greek. And they don't all mean exactly the same thing, but they all have this sense of people gathering together, and you have a right to freely assemble. And you still have a right to freedom of religion. And, of course, religion is what? Taking care of the needy of your society. That's what religion was, Threskia. And pure religion was to do it without the help of the government that called itself benefactors but exercised authority, the constitutional orders and systems of government that men make for themselves. You weren't to apply to them for benefits because they exercised authority one over the other, and Christ said it was not to be that way with you. Everybody I know, just about, except those people in the network, I mean, if I'm going to all the different Christian churches, they think that's okay, even though Jesus said it's not okay. They just ignore that. Unless their pastors begin to tell them the truth, they can't do anything about it. We point it out, and it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other. They just grasp it. Because if they really understood what we were saying, they would immediately be trying to gather together with others and start doing this and working to find other people that are willing to go this way and gather with them, because you wouldn't want to forsake the gathering together. But yet people hesitate because it's so different, and they want to chew on it. Well, eventually you're going to have to swallow or spit it out. You're going to have to decide, I'm going to become a part of this, or I'm going to sit on the sidelines and wait for somebody to make it all happen for me. And because it's not going to happen for you that way. You're going to be left behind. So anyway, on the stones they got was their name, and you actually, archaeologists will find stones with Hebrew names carved on them, little white stones. And actually, I was looking at a picture the other day of a fairly large white stone that not only had the Hebrew name carved on it, but it was carved in a way in which it could, you know, be impressed into clay or wax as a stamp. But Herod had this scheme, and he sent out these missionaries all over to create this system of social welfare or security called Corban. And it had a certain commercial affluence to it because it was guaranteeing your social welfare. But in order to do that, it had to compel the offerings of the people. You couldn't depend on faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. Jerusalem at that time was a major city in a cosmopolitan culture, according to the book Jesus Within Judaism, which was an archaeological book by James H. Charlesworth. But he was saying Jerusalem was this major city in a cosmopolitan culture. It contained not only the temple, but also large arenas for chariots and horse races, you know, kind of a hippodrome, a stadium for athletic contests, gymnasiums, and massive theaters. What we have is TV, which is your Colosseum in a box. But all these cultures had to have this free bread and circuses in order to entertain the people, distract the people, and entice the people to walk a certain way that draws them away from the Spirit of God into this realm where covetousness is okay, because it makes you feel good. People needed to be entertained. They needed to be lulled. And then I do quote from another book even that talks about some of the same thing, which is Jesus, the Evidence, which I mentioned before by Ian Wilson. And he says, in 20 to 19 BCE, Herod the Great set in motion plans to make Jerusalem Temple the largest temple anywhere. Be absolutely fantastic, gold and everything, virtually in the world. Stretched a quarter of a mile long by a fifth of a mile wide. 20,000 functionaries were employed in its servicing. Were they all killing sheep? No. They're running an entire welfare system for a nation, very centralized, very controlled, and it exercised power one over the other. It forced the contributions of the people. This is how it worked. Herod subsidized games and festivals with this money, and there were even riots, which I've talked about before, at the time, and they're mentioned. Jesus mentions them when he talks to Pilate. Riots at the time of Jesus, because they had spent some of the money that was in their social welfare fund on building an aqueduct, which was going to help some people more than other people, and they thought that wasn't fair. So there were actual riots that they had to put down with physical violence, in which Herod didn't regret. Herod was dead by then, but which Pilate regretted having done, but he didn't know what else to do. So anyway, but this was all part of the Pax Romana, keep people happy, give them what they want, entertain them, lots of benefits. I quote another source, which is The Star of Bethlehem by Craig Chester. I mean, there's hundreds of footnotes in the book to try to show you that we have these other sources, but they're pieces of the puzzle. There's enough pieces of the puzzle where you can start putting it together. But the reason we're quoting all these sources is not to create that authority in your mind. And we're going to repeat that over and over again. But to crack this shell you've created of what you already believe is true. But anyway, he writes in the year 2 BC, marked the 25th anniversary of Caesar Augustus' rule and the 750th anniversary of the founding of Rome. It involved a huge celebration that were planned all over the empire, the whole empire. The doors of the Temple of Janus, which was part of the way in which they financed war, but there was other reasons why they had Janus. That's why Janus had two faces. There were two parts to that, but they were actually closed. And this was rare because it was only about a third of the time that Rome exists that they weren't open and getting ready with their peace offerings to make war. To honor their emperor, he goes on to write, the people were to rise as one and name him Pater Patriae, father of the country. That's what they were supposed to do. He was the Patronus. He was our father who art in Rome. Hallowed be thy name. Daily bread comes from you, great Caesar. And we serve you by paying you funds, which is a form of worship, supporting your administration, your daily ministration to the needy of society. And of course we have to once we sign up, but which is not in accordance with God, because if you go back to Moses, it was all free will offerings, free will offerings, free will offerings. You go to Jesus, it's free will offerings. Go to Paul, it's faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty. Go to John the Baptist. If you have two coats and your neighbor has none, share. Do the same in meats. They're talking charity. But Herod wasn't talking charity. Augustus Caesar wasn't talking charity. They were talking, you have to pay in. If you sign up, you have a share. You will be statutorily required to pay in. You see, that draws you away from the ways of Christ, the ways of God, the ways of Abraham, the ways of John the Baptist, even the ways of Buddha. So I don't really care if you're a Muslim or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Christian. If you're coveting your neighbor's goods to the men who exercise authority, you have betrayed all those great prophets. You have turned your back on them and walked away from them, and you have gone far from them and the God whomever they serve. And you're a liar. You don't believe in God or Allah or any of those things. You believe in coveting your neighbor's goods, and because all these religions are against that. But all of you do it. And you've made a disconnect, and the reason you've made a disconnect is because you walk through a door. And you believe that it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods as long as you do it to these pater patries, these fathers of your country. But Jesus said, call no man father. And why was I quoting this particular thing? Because that was the pater patriae enrollment fits perfectly to the census. Because we know, historians know, there were no census in Rome at the time that Jesus was supposedly born. They kind of call it a census, but it's not a regular counting the people census. It's counting the people as who's your daddy. It's the benefit system. It's not who's in the country. It's the benefits. Who is taking the benefits of the man who exercises authority? They did not despise, the Jews did not despise this commander-in-chief of this mighty multinational military force. They were actually invited in. Pompey was invited in to settle a civil war dispute in Judea. That's why he was there. To roll back some of the injustices of the Hasmoneans. But anyway, the whole article in Thy Kingdom Come, it goes on and talks to you further about this, the idea of Herod's greatest fault and what it was, his passions and his hate and his anger and his fear of losing his throne and his crimes. But we're trying to set a picture so you understand what the kingdom is not. Because much of what he did, you have now done. Much of what Augustus did, you have now done. You don't have any king but Caesar. Christ is not your king. You're not doing what Christ said. And you need to repent and turn around. And when you start trying to go back the way you came, which is what repentance is, to returning back like the prodigal son, your eyes will be open. You will be brought near to the source of the Spirit and farther from the tree of knowledge. You can still see the tree of knowledge. You can still have knowledge and information, but you will not be moving from knowledge. We're going to keep returning to that subject in this series because this is the problem. You're eating of the tree of knowledge and not the tree of life. And we can tell this because you think you're supposed to study, 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 study. And what you're supposed to be is diligent. That's what the word actually means there. When it says study to show thyself approved, it says be diligent. The word is never translated study anywhere else. They just decided, scholars decided to make it diligent study there, but it actually means diligent. And so this changes our perspective. Now, it doesn't do any good if I convince you to change your perspective. And I don't encourage you to change your ways. And that's why you know, we don't want you to leave your existing church. We don't want you to stop going to your existing church, if you go to church at all. We don't want to change your beliefs. We want you to start to walking in the ways of Christ. And it's best to do that with others trying to do that. And I can guarantee you that everybody who congregates amongst our network at thelivingnetwork.org or thisholychurch.org or wherever you want to go and connect to the network, go to the network links and join in your local area and try to form or join with or meet with other congregations' records. It's not going to be like other churches. And if you still want to go to your other churches, that's fine. But start studying and looking at what can we do to expand a network of people that want to live by faith, hope, and charity, who want to love their neighbor as themselves, who want to be there as the social welfare that does not exercise authority one over the other. And we're going to continue this, and some of the other, we quote from the Living Times of Jesus of Nazareth, which was a Peter Connolly book and other things. And we'll also quote from the book Covenants of the Gods in this series, all of which you can read for free online and download for free in many different formats. But it is the answer. It is the salvation for everything that is going wrong in the world today. Because everything that's going wrong in the world today is because the spirit of Nimrod or the spirit of Cain, the spirit of destruction and self-destruction. And, look at all the people committing suicide. It's unbelievable. Where's that coming from? It's coming from a realm that we have opened a Pandora's box to. And it's coming into us and controlling our thinking. And we need to turn on a light. And let that, and we can't make that light ourselves. We have to depend upon God to do that. And that's where we need to go. So until next week, you can join us on the network. We got lots of people that are going to try to break you in and teach you on how this works. But join the congregations. Start figuring out the secrets and mysteries of the kingdom. And until then, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you. God bless.
Oh, thank you so much. Wonderful, wonderful program again.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church, at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.
Okay, well, up next is See the Power in You, our special guest today, Tim, James, Glenn, and we'll be back with you after just this short commercial message, so stay tuned.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
Search FreedomizerRadio.com for Dr. Norman to find his interview here at Freedomizer Radio.
Globe Sound and Consciousness Institute presents the Globe Sound Healing Conference with the full spectrum of the most well-known and respected pioneers, researchers, therapists, doctors, and musicians in the field. The conference will focus on acoustic instruments, sound and medicine, new sound technologies, sacred geometry, and raising consciousness with sound. The conference is being held September 26th to the 29th in the San Francisco Bay Area. Call 415-777-2486 or go to GlobeSoundHealingConference.com. That's GlobeSoundHealingConference.com.
I'm not a lab rat.
I'm not a lab rat.
My family is not a bunch of lab rats.
I am not a lab rat.
Thanks, but no thanks. 80% of the processed food in America has been genetically modified.
That's GMOs. That's GMOs.
You can't even tell what foods contain GMOs at the grocery store.
Because no GMO food labels are required. That makes us the guinea pigs.
Sounds like an experiment to me.
GMOs are scary.
It's up to you.
You're an adult. You can vote.
I can't vote because I'm a kid.
Vote yes. Vote yes. Please vote yes. Can I get a cookie?
Freedomizers, you have a voice.
How will you vote when initiatives are added to the ballot in your state?
Problems with Common Core, I don't even have time to go into most of them, but a step in the right direction would be to give local communities, teachers, parents control over their schools so they can design curriculums and standards to best meet the needs of their students and get the federal government out of education.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
Okay, well, thank you all for joining us here today at Freedomizer Radio. See the Power in You. Cheryl Greenlee, I'm your hostess for the next 2 hours, and we have a special guest today, Tim, James, Glenn. Breathwork has always been central to personal and spiritual development. All great spiritual traditions teach some form of breathwork. It includes various types of meditation, which take breath as their basis. Breathwork is both in a field of its own and part of the field of somatic. In recent years, breathwork has developed and into a variety of forms and practices, such as conscious breathing techniques, conscious connected breathing, and integrative breathwork, primal therapy, rebirthing. It has a number of names. And Tim is here to share with us his experience of teaching breathwork and helping facilitate the healing of others through that work. So welcome in, Tim.
Well, thank you very much, Cheryl. Where would you like to start with the breathwork?
Well, maybe you could give the audience a little overall, you know, I mean, I give just a kind of a real brief introduction to breathwork, but perhaps start with an introduction.
Okay. Well, my introduction to breathwork was over quite a long period of my life, and then I had a real sonic shot in the arm about 10 years ago with the passing of my other half. And that was so traumatic that many of my friends didn't think I was going to be alive or make it through it. And I find this out 5 years after the fact. They, you know, they don't tell you these things. But when I was a child, I was actually in touch with breathwork through wanting to get the most out of the breath that I brought in and having it be used in the most economical and efficient way in my body. So what I would do is I would run. We lived above a junior high school track, and I would run on the track with large inhales in my mouth, and I'd slowly let it trickle out of my nose. And I thought that that would maximize my body's ability to utilize oxygen, as I had been hit with the idea that we were losing our oxygen percentage concentration on the planet. It was dropping from a higher percentage than 20 to, at that time in the 60s, it was about 8%. And that was my motivation. Little did I know, I was actually stepping up a consciousness path for myself. As the breath ushers in consciousness, and I have since learned that oxygen is the carrier of the consciousness. And I really had that accelerate, like I said, about 10 years ago when I became affiliated with a group organization called Transformational Breathing. And when I first went to the breath work, it was right after my traumatic loss, and I had dramatic results within the first few days. And then after the week's seminar, I was exceedingly ahead of where I'd begun as far as being not so traumatically broken down and grief-stricken. I'd integrated all these blocks in my energy, as they're called, and I was feeling 100 times better. However, as a lot of us do, there is a resistance that I experienced, and that came from my wanting to be with the one I'd lost, and in my experience, I would find her in my sleep, and so I would naturally want to extend my sleep. Well, that was a resistance I came to find 8 months later, and after that was pointed out to me, I regained my association with the breath organization. They're very loving, and they really want the best for you. And I kept on getting reminded, you got to get back into it, get back into it. And so I laid down again. We lay down to breathe generally, and we're facilitated. And on my third breath, see and feel what I call spirit, and it's like little twinkle lights filling me up. That was the point of change for me. And from that point on, it was a fast-track integration. And within a matter of 6 months, I was opening with my new girlfriend, who was from Turkey, the first seminar in the Middle East. So it was a lifelong discovery for me, and it was a fast-track after a great loss that that helped me heal tremendously. And it, without it, I don't think I would have made it.
Talk about a life preserver.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It was definitely being thrown a lifeline. And I was divinely led. There's no question about that. I had actually arranged for my other half to go to that actual seminar, and I found myself taking her place after she was not here anymore. So, you know, your guidance comes when you need it. Just a matter of allowing it to happen. So I found that the breath work really does allow you to get out of your way, and it allows you to step into the flow of where you are intended to be with your destination to be here to begin with. And it really makes your life so much more connected. Would you like to know the physical processing of how that works, the facilitating?
I would. I would like that. You know, I'll share a little bit more of my own personal experience, because Tim was kind enough to give me a breathwork session. But, yes, please explain the physiological portion of the process.
Well, I'd love to. But first, let me ask you, what you can tell was your experience of the process. We really didn't have a time to chat about that. Can you tell me what you noticed before, you know, compared to before the process and after your breath experience? And naturally, the energy, the shift keeps magnifying and exponentially. You entrain to a higher vibration automatically once you've started the process of getting into the flow, basically.
Yes. And I felt that. I felt more energized. I feel more connected. I think that I know things now that I didn't know at the time, where I think I could have made my experience more, I could have developed it more fully. Part of it was not knowing anything at all. I mean, I came into the process completely without any idea of what to expect. I personally, physically, I had both my arms went completely numb. And what I heard when you were sort of giving the instructions was to notice, you know, to pay attention to the various sensations and things in my body. So I just sat there and noticed it. I didn't really say, hey, my arms are numb, to maybe facilitate, you know, some kind of a progress beyond that. So I don't know. And it was almost not just a numb feeling, but almost a painful contraction in my hands. I remember looking down at my hands after we were finished, and I said, "I don't hold my hands that way."
Mm-hmm.
It's like my hands were locked.
Yeah, that's associated with a holding on. And a resistance to flow, which, as you know, when I guided you, which is called facilitating, you mm-hmm. to focus on what you're bringing in through what you're breathing in on your inhale, and mm-hmm. Surrendering your exhale, just letting it go. You recovered from your feeling, and your hands became relaxed again, and it's cool. It's neat that it was. Symbolized by the holding on in your hands. Your hands came to a holding on kind of a position as well. and you had mentioned the not knowing. Well, that is really actually helpful to not know. In the breath work, it is very helpful to surrender the conscious mind, that in the everyday decision making, so that you access the subconscious mind. And that is where the magic happens. That's where the healing happens. Einstein used to say the problem that happened in one mind, you have to heal in another mind, meaning that you have to let go of the everyday conscious mind, which is a small percentage of what our true mind is. Our true mind is a very large percent of our being. And this breathing process directs us to access it fully. So the not knowing is actually a good thing. It's a way to be present and in the moment with what you're doing without thinking. And that's what we want to do, is we want to let the thinker take a break and let the feeling body and that access into the subconscious mind, where we have what I always bring to mind to people is, you know that state that you're in when you're sleeping and you're grinding your teeth?
Yes.
Did you ever experience that, Cheryl?
I did have a problem with that for a short period of time, so I'm slightly familiar with it, yes.
Mm-hmm. That, when you activate your breath, that's what we call it, is an activated breath, which means that you've surrendered your thinking mind to your subconscious feeling mind. You are at the state of surrender that you experience when you're at sleep and grinding your teeth. Then, as a facilitator, in keeping the breath flow going and integrating those blocks to energy, which is what the teeth grinding is, it represents a block to energy, and it can be associated with frustration over expressing yourself over something that could have happened one time, could have happened 30 years ago, or could have happened 3 days ago. It doesn't matter. It's where it's fixated and held onto in the body that matters. And so it can be associated with another thought form having to do with any form of frustration or anger or something like that. And it really doesn't matter that we find out what it is. What matters is that we bring our awareness to it, and that's what a facilitator will do, is they will touch the spot that the tension is, that the energy is being blocked, and there will be, or not, an affirmation associated with the energy that and the thought forms that are in that particular realm of the body metaphysically. There's metaphysical maps that have been drawn to guide one to discover and to say things associated with particular places of the body. And it can also be intuitively given. There's an intuition that guides in this process, and there's divine energy that once you allow the divine energy to flow, you hear it very, very well, loud and clear. So when you get to that state, you're in that activated breath, your mind is brought to the awareness of the blocks. An affirmation can be spoken, like I said, or not, but what happens is that energy that's being held there is dissolved and let go. And when that energy is let go, you feel a tingling sensation. You feel that energy. Do you recall yourself feeling that kind of energy once you had let go of in your hands, your arms? Did you feel that starting to flow?
I felt a lot of energy in my face, mostly around my mouth. My lips felt like they were like 10 times bigger than I know they are. I felt a lot of energy in my mouth and in my jaw area. But, you know, that's typically, it's been an issue for me for a really long time. I grew up in and I've said this before, it was dangerous in my family to speak out. It was dangerous to be noticed. So that breath work was very out there in somebody else's face, being, you know, I was being watched. So there was a heightened awareness of all of those things for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about is a mindfulness, a heightened awareness, an allowing who we really are, and as opposed to a repressing or a suppressing of our energy and the thoughts of who we are, knowing our knowingness of who we are. And I recall, actually, we did this quite late, and I recall you making a statement that you really didn't think you could sleep tonight because you were so energized.
Oh, yeah, that's right. When I mean, after the session, I felt, I mean, it was like 1:30 in the morning, and I felt like I would, well, maybe a couple hours after I get up, because I wake up kind of slowly sometimes. But, you know, that just, or right after a good, dance session, because I used to swing dance and country western and ballroom and all of that. So after a really good session of dancing, I would feel that energized.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we've experienced when we release the blocks, and they could be anywhere in our body. They generally, we begin when we're born starting to create blocks associated with our egoic identification, which can start even in the fetal stage, but we really don't know where everyone is different, but there's some point during the development of our inception into our, while we're in our mother, that we our soul is brought into us, and we have a beginning of an egoic identification. And all too often, and it could very well be at the point of birth too, all too often we identify pain as the physical sensation, and we associate the feeling of shame or guilt with that pain. And that all too often seems to be the basis of our identity, which I found to be an understanding that an author of a book that I can't recall, I think it's called Getting Out of Here Alive or something to that effect, had expressed to me, and that seemed to fit, and I've carried that with me through the breath work. And in the beginning, the breath work, when Leonard Orr first came up with it, with his experimentations in the hot tub and Sonda Ray working with him, it became known as rebirthing. And the reason it became known as rebirthing is because they let go, they worked on bringing awareness to those blocks that we were ingrained into us at birth. And during the initial breathing sessions they called rebirthing, they activated very quickly with the hot water. And they were doing at that time a half breath. It was basically an upper chest breath, and we have extended it to be a full breath, like a baby, and I call it the baby's breath myself, where you're breathing all the way down to the pelvic girdle. That's the seat of our being in energetically, and the base of our spine, and it represents our foundation and our divine connection to Mother Earth. And whether the energy is flowing through there or not, it determines on how grounded we are and how powerful we are, and it has a lot of effect on our lives. But however, in the beginning, when they were just discovering the power of rebirthing with Leonard Orr and the likes of Sonda Ray, they would let go of the traumas that were experienced at birth, and they had an amazing emergence out of the state of awareness that they were living in prior to their experience of that. As we've gone on, a woman, Judith Kravitz, who's become a very close friend of mine, she started out with the rebirthing, and she had an experience where she had three young children. This is in the mid-70s, I believe. And she had a tumor on her throat the size of a softball, and she didn't think much of it in association with the rebirthing, but she was doing the rebirthing, and 3 weeks into it, she noticed as she was putting the lotion on her body, as she does every day, that her tumor had shrunk to near nothingness in her neck, and the next thing she knew, it was absolutely gone, and the doctors validated that. So she made the connection that there was something going on there with letting go of traumatic belief systems, allowing energy to flow, the hyperoxygenation, the detoxing that's associated with oxygenating and the alkalizing effect and all that. And she eventually expanded her transformational breath, expanded the breath down into the pelvic region, and we have that as the first stage in what we call belly breathing. And the three steps became known as, the first step is getting the breath into the belly, your foundation. The second step is to surrender any hesitations, so there's no pauses between the inhale and the exhale, or the exhale and the inhale, and you create a dynamic circuit. And then the third stage would be relaxing the exhale, so you're symbolically with your mindfulness, you are bringing yourself to the moment of surrender and letting go of any pattern that you may be holding on, any pattern that can even manifest in your life of holding on, of moving forward or pushing too hard. So that represents in your exhale just being a sigh. And I always give the example of letting go of the arrow. You know, the inhale is you draw the arrow back on a bow, so it's like a slow draw of maybe a three counts. And then the exhale, you just let that arrow fly. And believe it or not, the way the diaphragm is designed, every bit of oxygen that you've brought in on the inhale comes exhaling with that sigh in one-third of a count, as opposed to three counts on the inhale. So that is a very good way I've found that most people understand a dynamic flow of the breath. Did you want to say something, Cheryl?
Well, I certainly. You know, I'm sitting here as you're speaking, and I'm remembering, you know, the experience and going through some additional experiences in my mind of the process. That's all.
Okay.
Nothing particular.
Well, beautiful. So I know you had told me that you do something at the top of the hour and the bottom of the hour, and we're a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour. Did you want to instruct me on what to do?
Yes, we'll take a short break. We have an update from Kurt John Forty on the road with Profit Organics, and he's got a program where he's assisting farmers in turning organic from conventional farming. So we'll take a couple minutes to hear his update and take a commercial break. I know that you had some other topics that you wanted to talk about, and so our flow is going to be, you know, we'll take a break at the next half hour, and I don't know when you want to bring in your guest. So we can kind of go from there.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll just listen to the organic farming and see you on the other side.
Okay, we'll be right back. Kurt John Forty is with us. Good afternoon, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Cheryl. We finally have sunshine here in Wisconsin. We've been having rain all week, virtually devastating rain. We have been planting additional test plots with the Profit Organics for the corn research plots for farmers and doing different things for different reasons. We planted a plot on Monday night. We got 4 inches of water. The water came down off from the highway across the land, washed out big ditches across it. We shoveled the dirt back in Tuesday, repaired it, replanted it. We washed out again Tuesday night. We had a 5-gallon bucket setting in the garden. We had 9 inches of water in it on Wednesday morning from 2 nights of rain. And, you know, it's real disheartening. You put all that work into planting thousands of seeds by hand, precisely placed, to come out and just see it a muddy mess is real disheartening. And you sit there, and I have one guy that's been helping me and his wife also. And I told him this yesterday when we were doing it again for the third time. I said, I don't see the problem here. You know, I don't see the ditches. What I see in our effort is the vision of a month from now, a nice-looking plot of corn, all equal and standing there nicely. And in order to have that, we have to go through this effort in order to replace the seeds that were washed out to make a even pattern. And so we discussed that a little bit. And it was kind of a lesson to myself. It's like, how badly do you want to complete this project? And you just keep doing it no matter what. And, of course, then I thought back to the March Against Monsanto, the striving to see the organic food industry brought front and center and become dominant in our society, and we just have to keep at it. Each and every one of us, like I have said before, the power of multiplication, each of us having a clear vision what we want and a clear focus on how we're going to do it, and then you just keep at that. And also, in this last week, has convinced me that we need to drastically change the way that we've been approaching farming. Both the organic farms that are plowed up and everything suffer some erosion loss, and also the chemical farmers are having a challenge, and they're losing a lot of dirt, and we can't afford to do this. Well, wonderfully, all this devastating rain causes you to think, what can we do? And we're expounding on the idea that we've been talking about planting oats as a companion crop in narrow rows between the corn. And we planted a plot this week for the wide row farmers, the ones that plant 36-inch wide rows, instead of our 12-inch project with 12-inch rows of corn and then a row of oats halfway in between each of those rows. For the other farmers that plant wider rows, we planted 5 rows of oats in between them and then left a 12-inch space for the corn. So what we've done is taken our project that we've been doing with 12-inch corn and adapted it to every single farmer's opportunity to embrace this. And so it's kind of exciting. Sometimes it takes the devastation of a radical change or a traumatic change in life or in business in order to come up with the necessity to take a different path and take a different approach to it. And in all of this rain that we've had, we have not been able to get into the gardens or the test plots to do any kind of weeding just because it's mud all the time. And yesterday and today, I have invented 2 new modifications to tools that we use for the garden that are applications from the farm fields. And those wouldn't have happened without the hard pounding rains that make the soil hard, and we need to have a way to loosen it up again and everything. So I bought materials today to build one of those items that I have pictured in my mind, and this afternoon I completed building the first one, which is they're 2 different separate units. And so I guess the conclusion of my statement for today is just keep your eye on the finished product. And whether it's promoting healthy eating, good physical health, our mental thinking, our focus on things, keep the end in mind as you begin the project. And that's where you go, is you do whatever you have to do to get to the end finished product.
Well, excellent. And thank you very much for keeping us updated on your project. ProfitOrganics.com, just go and check out Kurt's website, and stay tuned till next Saturday, maybe next Saturday, we'll see. We've talked about giving Kurt the summer off since he's in planting season, but we'll keep you updated as best we can on all of that project. So thanks, Kurt.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Okay. Well, you got to hand it to the guy. That's a lot of tenacity to get out there and plant, fields of corn 3 times. That's some determination, and we certainly appreciate that of all of our farmers, not just Kurt, because they all deal with their weather challenges, whether it's too much rain or not enough. So we appreciate all of you very much. So that went a little longer than I thought we were, so we'll take a commercial break at the top of the hour, Tim, and let's get back into talking about the breath work. Where would you like to go next?
Well, let's see. I guess it would be a good thing, since we began on the steps of the breathing, to bring in the healing that happens on the mental and the emotional levels. And that essentially begins with the dissolving of the blocks, like I said, in the belly breath. And we always come back to the belly breath. That is our foundation, that physically speaking. What that does is it ensures that our diaphragm is working the way it was designed to work. And just by letting go of the diaphragm and the thoughts that are associated there, which have to do with your expression and reception of love, which has to do with your surrender, your willingness to surrender to your own divine guidance, basically. And that activity resonates throughout all of your relationships to the world and to others, and your reception and expression of pleasure, your reception and expression of power as well, are all held in the extreme sides of the diaphragm muscle, the center, and in the center of between the middle and the outsides are all these points of thought forms that are mentally and emotionally held in our bodies. So with the breath, as we entrain to a higher vibration in what we call activating our breath, and we actually set a sacred space for this to happen. We intend this to happen, and we by this intention, we create this sacred space for us to experience this. And with the surrendering to the flow of our breath, the dynamic flow, we are able to integrate into our whole being anything that has traumatized us. And our choice of selection of what we are dealing with comes from its importance is chosen by the person breathing. It's only their agenda. The facilitator is only there to hold the space and to guide awareness to the places, for instance, I told you about the jaw. It could be anywhere in the body where the tension is held. Mm-hmm. When we've integrated how much we're ready for to experience at that time, because you can well imagine it can be a tiring experience as well as a joyful experience. We, as the breathing angel, the person doing the work, subconsciously is guided when they've had enough. And at that point, it shifts into what would be the final phasing of the breath, and you'll find yourself in a space of discovery and connectedness and wholeness. And a lot of people say they spoke with their higher self, or they spoke with their divine, whomever it is in their life is their divinity, their whom whatever they see as a God force, for instance. Or some people say they've traveled somewhere. And what it is that you see when you're observing these people is they're in a joyful, peaceful, happy, energized place, and you just go with it, and you are notified by them when they've had enough. They are the ones truly guiding the session, and it's the facilitator's job to observe this and to know how to let it be as far as guiding their awareness if it needs to be at any point. For instance, if they start to hold on to an emotion which would egoically derail their healing, then the facilitator will guide them back into the breath of integration and help them to dissolve that block and allow their flow to remanifest. So once they've gotten back on track, then the process of wholeness in their mind, body, soul, spirit, and emotion generally takes over again. So when you come to the end of your phase, you have the experiences like what you'd experienced to me, where you're fully energized. You notice that your hands were in a clenched shape, but you didn't know why. However, upon reflection, after you've heard what I've said just in the last hour, you may have come to some kind of conclusion that, wow, maybe that represents me holding on to something that it was time for me to let go of. And maybe you might be able to think of something that you've recently let go of that would symbolize and align with that change in your energy flow. Is there something that you can recognize from that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've been learning a lot about essential oils in the past 2 years from my lovely co-host, Miss Cookie, who's hanging around there in the background listening. It was something that I've just recently really gotten a grasp of. It's like the gears clicked into place. But I haven't really shared that with other people. And I don't know if it was probably because I like to, you know, if I'm going to share something with someone, I want it to be correct. I don't want to share information that's incorrect. And I have a little hesitancy about sharing new information that I've learned because I don't want to transfer, things that I might have misconstrued. And I sort of let go of that. This week, one of my neighbors was suffering from a bladder infection, and I took it upon myself to go and look it up, and I trusted, I muscle tested to develop a little blend for her, an essential oils blend for her that would facilitate her healing, and I showed her things that I normally sort of just, I feel a little, it's like this, it's, to me it's on that woo-woo edge of things. And I'm still trying to grasp the solidity of those new concepts. They sometimes feel a little far out there for me. And I grasp it this week. For some reason, I grasp it, and then I let go of the whole idea of needing to be perfectly correct as I shared this new modality with my friends. So yeah, it's been pretty exciting actually around here the last couple days.
That's beautiful. I always love to hear these stories of personal transformation and change. And as a matter of fact, when I breathe people, facilitate people into their openness, the discovering of who they really are, essentially, it touches me emotionally every single time. When I see somebody in their divine grace, it is just the most beautiful thing. It reminds me right now, as I speak of this, of the beauty of the human condition in grace, and as I was speaking of this and thinking, listening to you, speaking of how you've discovered your incorrect news, you had that thing to stumble over and then you let it go and you realized it worked out just perfectly anyway, that every breath session is perfect for the moment. We manifest the conditions, we manifest the outcome, we manifest the perfection in our being every single time. It's just awesome. And in the connection with the divine grace of the human condition, when I was in London this last spring, fall, winter, I had been asked by a physician. I work with the world of what's called anti-aging, with the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine, and we have I have an associate friend of mine who founded the British Anti-Aging Society, and she introduced me to a doctor that is a maternity doctor. She's an MD, and she wanted to experience this breath work. I had come highly recommended from, as I told you, the woman who founded the British Anti-Aging Society. And so after I had breathed this maternity MD, she said to me, "Can you breathe pregnant ladies?" And I thought for a minute, well, yes. However, there are places on the body like the calves and the places between the shoulders and the neck that you really want to avoid, but yes, as long as you avoid those places, which can, you know, you can cause a woman to go into labor that way, you're fine. The woman can breathe, and she can actually have a more relaxing and enjoyable pregnancy as she's integrating any blocks, and the energy flows better for both her and her unborn. Her eyes lit up like a Christmas tree. She said, "You can breathe women into labor?" Hence, I found myself the following week breathing a beautiful childbirth into the London city, which was it's just so satisfying to be a part of something like that. It was just, as I can say, it was a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I did that several times before I came back to the States with the intention of exploring that further. So the breath is not only a tool to help us get in touch with ourselves and letting go of our incorrectness, so-called, of which there is really no incorrectness, all is perfect, but it's also a very powerful modality of healing, guidance, and it can also assist the body in tremendous letting go to its own energetic natural flows. So I have been very fortunate to have amazing experiences with not only helping myself overcome grief and patterns that have blocked my own abundance and now come healing from that and experienced a whole new abundance and a whole new way full of life's blessings. But I've also been able to share this with many people around the world. So I can relate and appreciate your story of getting out of your own way, essentially, is what you were telling me. And I really honor you, honor your inner child with my inner child with that story.
Oh, thank you. Well, it was liberating. I found myself being tickled, not just from being able to share something that I knew, but having the other person be receptive was awesome. The fact that she was receptive to all of this. I mean, you get people who look at you like you've got five heads if you talk about, you know, putting an oil on you and it's going to help you with your with your kidneys or your bladder or whatever. But she was completely open to it. So it was probably the universe's way of, you know, just putting me in exactly the right position. And
yeah, I agree.
I'll share something with you on a more personal level, you know, a little bit later about the circumstances of us getting together that was really interesting as well. And we've had a show host here at Freedomizer Radio, and she is in the business of helping women through birthing their children. She's going to be, she is located in Las Vegas. There seems to be a lot of things going on in Las Vegas, but I'd be happy to hook you up with those people if you'd like to take a little time in your Vegas trip to meet up with them.
I would be happy to explore that further. It's just, it puts a huge smile on my face to see that I was part of a process of bringing in a non-drug-induced labor and birthing of a child into the world. It's just, there's no words to express it. It's only feeling. Yes, absolutely. I let me give you my email that you can give to her and to anyone out there who would like to contact me with any questions about what I've spoken about. It's I just basically use my name at a Yahoo. So my name is Tim, and then my middle name is Jim, and then my last name is Glynn, spelled GLYNN. So that's TimJimGlynn at yahoo.com. And I'd look forward to communicating with anybody who'd like to know more about the breathing process and the other healing modalities that we'll be talking to you about in the next half hour of the show. Is there somewhere you'd like to go further with the breathwork right now? Or would you like to, you'd mentioned other modalities of healing?
Well, I would like to ask my co-host, Ms. Cookie, if she has any questions for you or comments on what you've spoken about so far, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'll introduce you, Ms. Cookie from Wisconsin, Tim Glynn.
Hi.
Hi, Cookie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm terrific. How are you?
Enjoying the program and enjoying what you're saying. I know breathing is very, very important. I've been a massage therapist for about 15 years. I am now retired, but, you know, breathing relaxes the body so the body can heal. And, breathing is very important in yoga and tai chi and different martial arts. In order to be able to have that strength and power. And so it's a form of when the body's actually at a relaxed state, that's when the body can heal, release, and let go. And so listening to everything you're talking about, and I know isn't there like two different types of breathing, breathing from the abdomen and then breathing also from the chest is a different.
Yeah, I briefly got into that with the rebirthing was very popularly known as chest breathing, and they actually have, as of the last 10 or 15 years now, adopted or gone into the belly breathing as well, realizing that that is actually the way our bodies were divinely designed, and results of transformation are profound.
Yeah.
So
not a difference also in breathing in through the mouth, in through the nose and releasing out through the mouth, and then a breathing that's different from the abdomen and then releasing it through the nose?
Yes, there are many, many, many facets of the tools we use in the breathwork, absolutely. And some of them, quite a few of them, date back several, 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 years ago, known as pranayams in the ancient cultures. So breathwork is not anything new. It's very powerful, and it's very profound. It's the first thing we do when we arrive on the planet is to inspire ourselves, to bring in spirit in, you know, when we inhale. And the last thing we do is to expire our breath, to exit our spirit. And we do that with the breath. The breath is a carrier of spirit into our body. So it's that powerful. That's the link between this world and the other world. The visible and the invisible world is linked with the breath.
Absolutely. I know, like with muscle testing, I was teaching individuals that when you take a deep breath and exhale and you put your arm up and somebody muscle tests for you, you're super strong. But if you take a deep breath and hold your breath, your arm will drop instantly and you become very, very weak. So I used to tell my clients, if I held your nose and your mouth shut for 3 minutes, you'd die and your spirit would leave the body and you'd be just a dead container. But if you take a deep breath and exhale, you become super strong. And not only that, by taking in that breath of life or energy field, it is the gift that you get from the Creator. So the point is, when I was talking about breathing coming from the abdomen or out through the nose or out through the mouth or how we breathe, I was just wondering what organs or what difference it makes from doing a belly breathing and then exhaling out through the mouth, or breathing in through the nose and exhaling out through the mouth. What is the difference? Does it work on the different chakra systems or the organs, or does it help utilize certain glands more, or what it actually does? And I guess that was my question to you.
Okay. Well, generally, you're right. It does affect all the chakras and the glandular, the endocrine cascade and everything. But directly, when you breathe, utilizing your mouth for the inhale and the exhale, as we do with what's called transformational breathing, you are assisting yourself to let go of your thinking mind. When you breathe in through your nose, you're stimulating your thinking mind. And the process of healing, as I referred to what Einstein had said, to fix a problem, you need to fix it with another mind than the one that created the problem. And so to get out of the thinking mind, which is generally the problem creator, you want to avoid stimulating it. And by doing a breath through the mouth and in and out, inhaling and exhaling through the mouth, you are essentially keeping your awareness out of your thinking mind and empowering your body mind, your intuitive mind, which is directly linked to your subconscious mind. So to answer your question, yes, we do. With transformational breathing, breathe in and out through an open mouth. If you want to do a pranayama breathing and stimulate certain aspects of your thought process, you breathe in through, breathe in or out. There's all varieties for different effects, and one should not play around with this unless they know, have been taught properly what they're doing, because you could cause an energy that may be uncomfortable for you. Let's just say, there are pranayams where you inhale through one nose and you exhale through one side of the nose and you exhale through the other side of the nose, for instance. Or like you said, you inhale through an open mouth and out through a closed nose, that kind of a thing. Those all have direct, powerful energy flow changes that a person should learn what they are doing before they just go, you know, do it. You really don't want to be doing these things blindly. So does that answer your question?
Well, yeah, and putting together with what I know, the brain is connected to the right and left sphere, which also has to do with our ego and our creativity, our male and feminine. But there's a second brain, which is in our heart, and actually is connected to the subconscious or our spirit. And
absolutely.
So when you're talking about breathing and getting out of the mind, what you're actually going is to the heart brain, so that you can actually go into more meditation and actually connect with spirit and actually go to the matrix or the universe where you're going to pick up the knowledge and wisdom of a healing process which connects with our inner spirit or our inner child, as you called it a little while ago. So, that did explain it. Thank you.
Yeah, you had mentioned the heart as a focal point, absolutely. Have you run across the awareness that the energy that powers our brain comes from the heart? The actual physical electrical energy, it's contained in the heart.
Yes, it's contained in the heart. And they said the heart actually should have been called the brain, but the heart is actually what motivates our auric field, and it magnifies 50 times stronger than all other chakras. So because of it, it actually goes out to the energy field and the electromagnetic field of the heart is what actually ramps up our auric field and also brings in information from the universe that has been programmed in our auric field, which is downloaded into our physical bodies, you know.
You have brought up a very important point when you mentioned the electromagnetic field of our hearts. There is another aspect to my my discoveries of utilizing electromagnetic field currents. We use them in the anti-aging business. There's a doctor affiliated with me who stated the last AACL, which is the Anti-Aging Conference London, last September, he actually stated to his peers that the next step is the spirit step, and that the healing that they're doing with the electromagnetic frequency combined with peptides and upper amino acids is they're actually regenerating limbs on soldiers now. That's electromagnetic frequency, which you had just mentioned, which brings a very important point up right now. We are living in an environment of electromagnetic pollution that is actually harming us in that realm.
Cheryl and I just talked about that today. We were talking about electromagnetic smog. And how I'm affected by the electromagnetic smog out in the world when, as you heard Kurt John talk today about having 4 days of rain here in Wisconsin, it pushes down the magnetic field of the energy flow of cell phone towers and transformers and, you know, satellites that are like on top of houses for dish TV and different things, and when it pushes it down, the clouds push it down toward the earth, it condenses, but then there's moisture in the air, and of course, we're electromagnetic. We have 80% water in our body and electricity, and our breathing helps get everything manifested and going in the correct direction, and actually the olfactory, when you breathe in through the nose like an essential oil, it will actually go to the brain, hit the electrical current, and it will transfer it through the body to whatever organ it needs to repair to bring up that frequency. But the thing is, it also goes down to the heart, which goes out to the energy field, which activates that and helps us to be more enlightened and more higher frequency or harmony. And so the thing is, it all works together, but on rain days, man, it's really kind of tough on me, and I guess I'm going to have to do a little bit more breathing exercises on those days.
You're absolutely right. Well, that is very profound what you just said about the smog and the toxicity from electromagnetic poisons, which is another aspect. On the positive side, there is technology out there now, and I have integrated it into the business I have to help people guide them in cleaning up their environment. It's technology that's plug-in technology, and you can knock your dirty electricity loads down to safe levels, even with the smart meters around, which are basically keeping us living in a microwave oven. The body can only repair itself when the cells have a chance to regenerate And that isn't really the case when you're constantly bombarded by frequencies that challenge and go beyond X-rays. So
right.
I've recently, and I'm going to try to bring on somebody on the show to speak about that after the next break, electromagnetic cures, electromagnetic frequency cleaners that you can plug in the wall or you can hardwire into your panels to bring your house into a protective place from the constant pollution that you just mentioned that we are subjected to on a daily basis. So, Cheryl, are we at a point where you want to take a break, or what should we do?
Excellent, yes. Actually, we have a caller from area code 931, so I'd like to take a quick call before we go to break and see what kind of questions or comments we have from our audience.
All right.
So, caller from area code 931, you're on the air.
Hi, actually, this is Salem Kay. I actually have appeared on Freedomizer on Johnny's show, The Pleasure Saucer, and I just decided to tune in and was really excited to hear about the topic because it's one I'm very interested in myself. I was going to initially ask about what he thought about exactly what you guys began to talk about, the cell phone towers and electromagnetic frequencies, and I'm glad you guys brought that up. Another question, and it sounded like he was maybe leading into that. I was wondering what your opinion on Reichian energy and orgone accumulators and things of that nature, as in magnets, for instance. I think, wearing magnets has been beneficial. But, what kind of things, you're talking about that you use to dampen the EMS pollution, and also what you think about Reichian or Wilhelm Reich's orgone energy, or however you pronounce it. And thanks for having me on, guys. But, yeah, that's just what I wanted to say real quick, and I guess we'll talk to you all later.
Well, thank you very much for that question. I believe your name was Freedom K. Is that right, Cheryl?
It's Salem K. Yeah, Salem K.
Salem K. The orgone energy is essentially the life force energy. You're absolutely right, and it's also known as toroidal energy, we have recently through the work of
Curian energy. You say
toroidal energy. Through the work of people like Bruce Lipton with the biology of the belief and being with your thoughts, changing your open and closing connections with amino acids, creating certain proteins or not. And going even deeper with the discoveries of, there's Tesla, who basically was dealing with orgone energy as the whole emphasis of his creations. It's essentially the energy from the center of the universe. It's the electron spinning around the proton, the moon around the Earth, the Earth around the sun, the galaxy around the larger cluster of galaxies. It's magnetism, it's gravity. It's all electricity and magnetism and gravity. Yeah, you're absolutely right. So I am 100% enthused with the Reichian work, and that's what I was talking about with the energy cleaners that we have.
I just came into the show kind of late, and like I said, just started listening through the phone. Don't have reliable internet access out here. But if you could give me your web address, because I'd definitely like to check out your work and what you guys are working with.
Oh, I'd be happy to. I gave out my email address before. Did you get that?
No. Like I said, I've just the past maybe 15 minutes or so. I just came in late in the show. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll just repeat that, and then I'll give you a website. The email address is my name, which is timjimglynn@yahoo.com, and I'll spell it. It's timjimglynn at yahoo.com, and you can write me with any future questions you may have. And then I have a clinic in Redondo, California, as well as one in London. And the one in Redondo, You can access the information on prolongyouth.com.
Cool.
Prolongyouth.
Prolongyouth.
Prolongyouth.com. And The physician there is a world-renowned medical doctor, anti-aging specialist that I work with. His name is Fouad Ghaly, Dr. Ghaly, G-H-A-L-Y. And the up-and-coming website associated with the prolonged youth is Brain Renew Plus, and that has to do with...
Brain Renew Plus.
Yeah, it has to do with all that we're talking about with generally maximizing our potential. You,
okay,
you know,
so
wherever we're at...
Brain Renew Plus. It's Tim Kim, Learn with a Y at Yahoo, and Brain Renew Plus.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the
and
question
Brain
before.
Brain Renew Plus, I'm sorry, I got horrible signal out here. Brain Renew Plus and Tim Jim Glenn, G-L-Y-N-N, Glenn with a Y at Yahoo.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay,
Brain Renew Plus, prolongyouth.com, and those have the definitions of what we're doing. And we don't have it on the website yet, but we are adding the EMF technology to clean up the environment that we all live in, the plug-ins to reduce this microwave pollution from the smart meters, for instance, that are constantly coursed with dirty electricity from the power companies through your panel into all the wiring around your house. So if you've got lamps plugged in around your bed or even just being near the walls that have the circuitry running through it, you're getting bombarded by those erratic electrons.
I've considered even climate change, for instance, to be connected to what they used to call global warming. You know,
right.
I mean, I'm not saying CFCs and fossil fuels aren't a big deal and aren't causing problems. But, you know, I do believe that, you know, I remember, I think it was Philip Whitehead, a member of European Parliament or Parliament in UK back in the 90s saying, okay, these things irradiate your brain tissue, speaking of cell phones, like the one I've got giving me cancer in my hand right now. But, you know, I think a lot is covered up about how deadly and dangerous and, you know, maybe even a lot of the mental illnesses and things that are just cropping up out of the last 10, 20 years, there could be a connection to not only, you know, the culture as a whole, but all this EMF pollution that, you know, our brain, like you said, our brains, and our whole bodies have like a sensitive etheric aura, and all this, you know, a lot of this metaphysical stuff from ages past was just where, you know, it was pre-scientific thought, you know. But yeah,
absolutely. I can recommend a video on YouTube. It's 2 hours and a half, I believe, by one of the creators and discoverer genius this man was in the 50s. He created the technology. It was used as top classified secret warfare against Russia from the Allies, Britain and USA particularly. It was microwave technology. And now we're using it as toys every day. Kids have it on their laps, and people have it against their brains, and women wear it in their shirt pockets against their breasts. And it's just crazy. So I'd like to recommend anybody who's interested in listening to the topic of the lethality of microwaves, which is what it's called, The Lethality of Microwaves by Barry Trower, B-A-R-R-I-E, I believe, T-R-O-W-E-R. It is an eye-opener of information. And not to be fearful in that information, just to know what is in your environment to take steps to guard yourself from it, to take steps. There are steps we can take to protect ourselves from this bombardment of any pollution.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Salem, for all those great questions and commentary. I really appreciate any time you call in.
Thank you, Salem. So I hope he understood. I guess I could repeat. The Brain Renew Plus is a brand new website. It may not have linked in yet, but you can find it through prolongyouth.com. And the doctor is Dr. Ghaly, who is my partner and associate, very well-respected doctor in all facets of medical doctoring as well as anti-aging and regenerative medicine. And so did you want to take your break now, Cheryl?
Excellent. Yes, we'll take our break. And if you would like to facilitate your call at this time, you could do that while we're taking our break.
Okay, I'll see what I can come up with. I'll see on the other side. How long is the break going to be?
About 3-4 minutes.
Okay. All right. See you then. Thank you, Cheryl.
All right. You're welcome. And we have another caller from area code 714. I recognize that you're there in the queue. And as soon as we get back from break, we'll bring you on for your comments or questions. So thank you all for tuning in here to Freedomizer Radio. See the power in you today with Tim, Jim, Glenn. So thank you all for joining us, and we'll be right back.
Are you dedicated to ending the new world order? Well, it's time to make way for spontaneous order. Hi, I'm Eric Bell, host of Freedomizer Radio's new hit show, For Whom the Bell Tolls, where you will hear current events from a volunteer's perspective, philosophical libertarianism, and a roadmap to a free and stateless society. Tune in every Tuesday at 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific and 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
ExposeTheTPP.org to find out more detailed information about what you can do. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer Radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Greetings, this is Blake the Eccentric, and I want to invite you to check out my new show on Freedomizer Radio, The Eccentric Perspective. It's sort of a red pill, blue pill, going down the rabbit hole kind of show, featuring outside-the-box politics, philosophy, and gonzo journalism. But be warned, with knowledge comes responsibility, and you might not see the world the same way again, as I will attempt to open your mind, speak to your common sense, and challenge your critical thinking skills. So please join me Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday from noon to 1:30 Pacific Time. Once again, that's Eccentric Perspective, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo. Be sure to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10:30 to noon Pacific Daylight Time and 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the Justice Club on Freedomizer Radio. Grab a snack, grab a latte, grab a friend, or grab a stranger. I've been on the front lines for 25 years, and I've been labeled as the crusader for equal rights by the media many times. So join my crusade on the Justice Club at Freedomizer Radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 10:30 to noon Pacific Daylight Time and 1:30 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Join us on See the Power in You every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and 12 Eastern. And join us with Hazel Carell from EndTimeEssentials.com to expand your knowledge on essential oils. Search FreedomizerRadio.com for Hazel and find the replays from the previous programs and expand your knowledge there as well. So thank you all for joining us here today at Freedomizer Radio. And I have some comments or questions here from area code 714. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Is Tim still in studio?
Tim will be back in a moment. Would you like to wait for him?
Sure.
Okay, great.
Good. Interesting was... show today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I think it's one of the most important issues, one of the most important issues that we face today is all these dangerous electromagnetic fields. They're invisible. You can't see them. You can't hear them. You can't smell them. And people across the country and other countries are getting sick in their bed, in their house, and they don't know what to do.
Exactly. Thanks for the comment, because it's very important. It looks like we've got Salem back as well.
Flip.
Yep, that thing's coming out of the kid, flip-flop.
You know what? It's going to not affect any of...
Am I still there?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay.
It looks like Salem's having some difficulties there.
I've seen that Barry Trower interview on YouTube. It was over 2 hours long. Probably one of the most interesting gentlemen on the subject. And if anyone gets a chance, they should definitely go on YouTube and put in anything by Barry Trower and watch the whole thing if you can, because really informative. He dates back all the way to the 1960s on these issues, and extremely important. There's a lot of people out there that are what they call electromagnetic sensitive, and they're hypersensitive to these fields, even having Wi-Fi in their house. I experienced something similar. I had a friend of mine stay over, and I left the Wi-Fi on, which I don't normally do, and forgot that it was on. And for 2 months, I had headaches, and I had dizziness. I thought something was wrong with me. And about 2 months, I figured out that I had left the router on. I pulled it out of the wall, threw it on the ground. I was really mad that I had done that. And the next day, my headaches were gone, and I had about 85% of my dizziness was gone the very next day.
That's amazing.
Connect Canada has been removing Wi-Fi from all elementary and middle schools for the last 2 years. I have a Canadian newsreel clip that I found on YouTube about it, and kids were reporting that they would be fine when they went home for the weekend, but as soon as they stepped 1 foot in the building with Wi-Fi routers into every classroom, their migraine headaches immediately came back, and they couldn't function, they couldn't learn, their attention span was, their grades just started plummeting. And so Canada recognized this, and they started legally enforcing that Wi-Fi be removed from all middle and elementary schools.
And they're doing absolutely the opposite here in California. They're installing Wi-Fi.
It's even worse than that. About a month ago, one of the major airlines, I think it was TWA, announced that they were going to start installing Wi-Fi on all their commercial flights. I don't want my pilot being slammed with an extra amount of radiation while he's flying. Not a good idea.
We've got Zach, and this gentleman has a question for you, Tim.
Okay. Who has a question?
Tim, this is Keith from Orange County.
Oh, hi, Keith.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. A little busy.
Very informative and very interesting subject. It's a subject that I think everybody should be talking about because there's so many people. I work in the health field. I have a company called Planet Health, and we do natural oxidative modalities. And I get a lot of calls from people that have migraines everywhere, and they can't figure it out. And interestingly enough, when they step outside of their house, about an hour later, their headaches go away. And then they come back, and the first thing I have them do is go out and see if they have a smart meter on the side of their house and or Wi-Fi in their house. And,
I'm not surprised. There's
a
lot
film,
of people
I don't know,
with multi-dollar houses that are finding themselves camping out in their backyard because they can't rest inside of their homes. It's such an oven.
Yeah, they're reporting neurological problems, sciatica, extremely bad migraine headaches, and brain fog. People that normally get up at 5 in the morning or on the go all day can't get themselves out of bed. Those are the common things that I've been getting reports from. And there's also a film, I don't know if you've seen it, it came out about a year ago. It's called Take Back Your Power. It's a 2-hour documentary on the issue of smart meters, Wi-Fi, and wireless phones in the house. Extremely important film to watch. You can watch it for free. It's on YouTube. It's a little bit more than 2 hours long. I got to attend the premiere, and jaw-dropping. The limits that they set in Europe for these electromagnetic fields being healthy or safe to a cell, in the United States, we're 20,000 times past that. So even when people say that they're not affected by it, they might not be classified as what we deem electromagnetic sensitive, but the damage to the cells is the same. You know, we're all human biological entities, so no matter whether you can, if you're getting a migraine or not, it's still doing the same damage to the cell. But the film is called Take Back Your Power, and I urge everybody to spend the time and watch it.
You brought up a very good point. It's enough to know what's going on, but it is also the remediation that's important. You want to protect yourself. You want to do whatever discovery of your particular situation and then find the remediation tools to soften and quell the effects of the damage to our temple, our living bodies. And the plugins that we've been bringing to people have changed their lives dramatically. What have you discovered to remediate these particular situations, Keith?
Well, I was talking about how I had Wi-Fi in my house, and a friend of mine, his name is Alan, he stayed for a while, and I accidentally left it on, and for 2 months I was really dizzy and bad headaches until I finally discovered it was the Wi-Fi, and I got rid of the Wi-Fi altogether. The first thing.
Is there anything else that you've been able to remediate, the smart meters or any other of the radioactive
There's a pendant that I really am happy with. It's called a quantum energy pendant, and it works off of scalar energy. When the volcanoes erupt and the lava dries, it exudes the highest amount of scalar energy on the planet. And this company stamps out a medallion out of it, and it kind of, when you wear it around your neck or in your pocket, it kind of engulfs your body and puts about a 10-foot round field, almost like you're in a bubble. And it seems to really help. Like when I go into convention halls that are red hot with Wi-Fi, they've got cell towers on the roof, Wi-Fi routers and boosters every 100 feet. I notice if I go into these places without it, my hip bone starts to ache within about 2 hours. And normally my bones never ache. But when I win the quantum energy pendant, I can go in there for hours and hours, and I don't seem to be affected by it. You can also charge water with it, but it's called the quantum energy pendant. The company is Fusion Excel, and there's a lot of knockoffs out there. So if you don't get it through Fusion Excel, it's probably a knockoff, and it's not going to work. But that's one thing that I use to combat all these fields. And the other thing I've done is I've stopped making cell phone calls within the cab of my truck. I learned recently that when you're on your cell phone in your car or your truck and you have all these electromagnetic fields bouncing around on the inside of your cab, you are causing a lot of damage to yourself by doing that.
Well, that's terrible.
And, of course, I never, ever, ever put the cell phone next to my head, not even for 30 seconds, 60 seconds, I'll get a frontal lobe headache that'll last most of the day if I do that.
Mm. And if you do get a headache, what have you found techniques to relieve yourself of that?
I am very much into ozone therapy, and I'll take the stethoscope. I have a ozone generator, and I take a stethoscope. I put it on both ears, and I do about 27 micrograms per milliliter for about 25 minutes, and that seems to really help. Nothing else seems to help when you get these headaches. It's when those vessels in the brain get constricted and blood can't flow, that's when you get those really nasty headaches. And there's a nice pathway through the ear canal, through the membrane, which it circles up to the sinuses into the brain, and you can get oxygen into the brain. And within about 20 to 25 minutes, I feel about 95% better.
Well, that's awesome. Have you found any frequency, particular frequency machines that help you in that process as well?
Dr. Bob Beck, who invented the Zapper and the colloidal silver box, was a good friend of mine, and he gave me a little box a long time ago called a brain tuner. And it kind of defrags your brain, for lack of a better answer, and once in a while I'll put the brain tuner on for about half an hour, 40 minutes, and I feel a little bit more normal with that as well.
So do you feel that for those who cannot find their way to ozone therapy, that the frequency healing would be enough of a calming effect or a reverse of the electrification?
Well,
effect?
I tell everybody, I live in Orange County, and it's very busy here, and everywhere I go, people have a cell phone glued to their head or glued to their children's head. Extremely bad, damaging thing to do. So the first thing I tell people is get the cell phone away from your body, because especially in children's age, 7, 8, 10 years old, where their brain is still developing, critically a bad thing to do. Eye, ear, and jaw cancer has been exploding all over the world for the last 12 years, and usually the tumors are on the side of the brain that people normally put their cell phone on.
Oh, boy.
Even the new iPhone 5 finally come with a warning buried in the instructions in tiny, tiny writing. And the warning says to never touch the cell phone to your ear, because as soon as you do, your whole head becomes the antenna.
Oh.
So, you know, whether you can get it away from your head, use an earpiece, try not to use it in a closed metal environment, are some of the first things that I tell people not to do.
Well, even an earpiece, you need to find the one that has the air block so that there's not a direct wire from your device to your ears as well, because that's a continuous electronic connection.
We tried to measure that, actually. We tried to measure a phone call with an earpiece, and we didn't get any reading coming from the earpiece. So if there is a signal, it's probably very, very low. But
Kurt,
I tell people to use their speakerphone whenever they can. You know, get the thing away from your body. Pregnant women should never have a laptop on their lap or anywhere near a developing baby. Or a lot of women run around here and they're putting their cell phone in their bras.
That is crazy. I know.
And then they're getting breast tumors.
Yeah. And then it would make sense that you also don't want your children, or anyone for that matter, to rest the laptop on the lap. It should be far away from the body.
Well, Steve Jobs, you know, who invented the iPad and iPhone, he died of pancreatic cancer. And I know he was highly stressed out. He was pretty much a slave driver type of person. But I have a feeling that some of the products that he invented were a means to his demise.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. But on the good side, besides making people aware of this potential and the actual danger that we're living in our new modern society, there are remediations.
Oh yeah, yes there is. There's another guy named, his name is Jerry Day. I met him at the film premiere of Take Back Your Power. He runs a website where he has two legal forms that people can download for free. Do you mind if I give his website?
No.
Oh, okay. It's freedomtaker.com. So freedomtaker, T-A-K-E-R.com. He has the legal forms that he's created to put your power company on notice that they are harming you. And after you've noticed them with these legal forms, there's a two different legal forms. You can call them and tell them that you've been sick since day one, that they've installed these dangerous pieces of equipment. You want to opt out. You want them off your property now. And once you've legally noticed them with an affidavit, unless they respond with an affidavit, they lose their legal right to come on your property and do what they want to do. The jurisdiction has changed. Otherwise, they just come on with the sheriff and break your lock and come on your property and do whatever they want to do. But he's a really amazing guy for the cause to get rid of smart meters. There was also a lawsuit that started about a year and a half ago in Santa Monica, Los Angeles, California. They were installing smart parking meters. And a woman who had a business on Santa Monica Boulevard for many years all of a sudden got a migraine headache out of nowhere. She went out front, and they were testing these new smart meters that they installed. She ordered them off the sidewalk, and they said, sorry, that's city property. You have no right to be here. And she went and got a lawyer, and she sued the city of Santa Monica for $1.2 billion. It was the front page of all the newspapers. And the lawsuit's still going on, and last I heard, she was winning her lawsuit. So it's a big issue, and unfortunately, these technologies are being installed everywhere throughout the globe. So we have to fight back. I was under the impression that the city of Los Angeles last year had imposed a moratorium on the installation of any new smart meters because the city and the city council was getting thousands of lawsuits from people that were getting extremely ill in their house.
Wow.
So this is it's a huge subject, and it's a subject that needs to be addressed because, I believe there was a county in California, Ojai, where there's a bunch of, there are a lot of green living and tech people up there, and the city council had heard about the smart meter dangers, and they voted to keep smart meters out of the entire county of Ojai, California.
Yeah, I was just up in Ojai, and they had success at that, but at the last minute, somehow the powers that be were able to supersede. But there are some people with smart meter opt-outs on there, and what they don't realize that I've discovered is that the power company will give you an opt-out. You pay for the opt-out plan. You get a meter put on your house that looks like an analog meter, but behind the analog is really a smart meter. So it's not really doing what you want, which is elimination of that microwave poisoning. You need to actually buy your own smart meter. As you mentioned, that website, Take Back Your Power.
Yeah, for $59.95, I think it's about $60, you can order an analog meter
through
Jerry's website.
It's
about $60, and if they don't respond to your legal demands to remove this dangerous piece of equipment from your property, he teaches you how to change it out. It takes about 30 seconds. It's extremely easy to do. Now, they're probably going to come out and try to take it off, but once you've filed those two legal notices on them, they cannot legally just come on your property anymore. They have to do it with your permission.
That's good news.
Yeah. No, Jerry Day is he's a incredible, knowledgeable man and an advocate for this terrible thing that's going on.
Beautiful. Well, I know that along with the company that I'm creating, in addition to my anti-aging business, which is also anti-aging, is to keep yourself preserved from damaging radioactivity, we have people that come out and measure the level of radioactive poisoning in your house and what different types. And we are suggesting remediations for that, which will help you live longer and more peace and be protected from the poisoning. Do you have any
commentary? That's fantastic.
Do
you guys have a website?
The websites I gave were prolongyouth.com, and
okay.
Actually that will link you to where you need to go.
Prolongyouth.com?
Yeah, and the associated website that I'm not sure is linked on yet because it's brand new is Brain Repair Plus.
Brain Repair Plus?
Brain Repair Plus, yeah. It's affiliated with the formulations the doctor gives, the IV formulations that cleans up the debris in the neuroreceivers and restores the levels of the neurotransmitters from the environmental damage and substance abuse or depression or overuse, such as a stockbroker might experience it, you know, overusing certain neurochemicals. It brings things into balance. And along with that is dealing with the toxicity from the electropollution and remediating that to allow your body to recover as well. We're all a holistic organism. We need to attend to all the facets of it. So, and it's part of the regenerative anti-aging medical healing, and the doctor's offerings, we have added the remediation for electropollution. Anyway, I need to take a little bit of a break. Can you have a question at this point?
Yes, we can take care of that for you.
Okay.
Can I speak?
Oh, yes. Please share.
I'm
sitting there saying Miss Cookie is really, she's being really quiet there. She must have something to say by now.
Oh, I got a lot to say.
Oh,
I've been into electromagnetic fields for probably 20 years, and I was associated with energy polarity down in Arizona, where there was a book written by a guy it was called Universal Truth or Laws. And anyways, he made diodes to block the energy fields. Years and years ago, when I used to have a phone in my car that was a bag phone. And anyways, those are hardly harmless compared to the new phones that they have out there. I don't have a smartphone, and I don't use microwaves because of all that information that you just put out there. But I have been in touch with all different types of diodes, and because I do muscle testing and check things out, and because I was in the field, when a person would carry their cell phone, like you said, in their pocket, and it would be close to their heart, they'd have heart disease, or they would have a problem with their left arm going down to their hand, and maybe they get a rotary cuff problem or tennis elbow or problems with their shoulder. And then we would have people that would put them in their back pockets and they'd have problems with their sciatic and going down the back of their leg or their knee. They wore it, like you said, if they wore it in on the front, especially a woman, if they're in a cubicle where there's a copy machine, a phone, all different types of technology that they have around them, and they do have about 10 things around them from anything that you can possibly think of. It affects the breath, it affects the brain, it affects everything, and so when they get cancer, they wonder why, just like a person that works with x-rays, you know, people that works with x-rays at the hospital, radiologists, they only have like a life expectancy of 4 to 5 years before they get a cancer, because what they don't understand is you can wear a lead apron and once you shut off the machine, it bounces still around the room. The energy can be created, but it can't be destroyed. I mean, it's created, and so the point is when a person has it, even though we can utilize energy, we can't create it or we can't destroy it. It just bounces around, and people just don't get that part of it, that it's always on the go. And so the thing is, I've over the years have, I had from a gentleman from, he was a Jewish man from Israel, he was into sacred geometry, and he made these special stickers that you could put on things, and it would block the energy flow of electromagnetic fields. So if you put it in your hand and you had one of these on, it would not affect your physical body. And so it's all you had to do is put a sticker on the back of your cell phone on the inside where the battery is and cover it up with the plate, or by your TV on the back, or by your computer on the back where the wire goes in, or on your electric blanket, or on anything, and it would actually balance everything off. And then I got interested in Slim Sperling and Bill Reed stuff, where they learn to do certain things in your homes where you can actually change the energy field so it goes over your house and your house becomes like a sanctuary, so that, you know, let's say the electromagnetic field from cell phone towers can't come through your windows, and they have different types of little things, you know, that you can do to your home, or you can put a tag on your electrical box, or, you know, on your smartphone that, you know, contains the energy so it doesn't affect you. Over the years, I learned about proclamations, and by saying a proclamation for electromagnetic fields, it protects you from being around anything like that. My problem, though, is that when a storm comes in and it pushes it down toward the earth and there's moisture with it and it magnifies, and see, if you are an individual that has a blockage in the body on your pathways, there's 14 pathways in your body, or if you have a diseased organ that's not functioning properly or you're misaligned, you will notice pain in your body, especially on damp, moist days. And I know a lot of people call it rheumatoid arthritis or arthritises or autoimmune diseases, but autoimmune diseases have to do with the electromagnetic fields or the nervous system of our bodies. So the point is, when something like that happens, that's why Grandma could always tell a storm was coming in 6 hours before, even if she never had a radio and never heard the TV and no one ever told her, because if her right knee was broken at one time, now because of that disruption, when the electromagnetic fields are pushed to the earth quicker and faster because of the clouds pushing it down, all of a sudden her right knee might start aching, and she'll go, oh, we're going to have rain today. And so the thing is, when we read the body and we know what's going on in the body, a lot of people that get into depression or pain or different things, it is all caused by the weather, the moisture, and also the electricity that is attacking us. And so the thing is, you know, there is things that you can do to counteract it, but the thing is, let's say, for example, these little paper diodes that are sacred geometry, they might cost $2, and, you know, cell phone companies could put them on the back of their battery packs in the cell phones and protect everybody in this world. But there's no money in that. You know, it might cost them 25 cents. You know, and the thing is, you know, they aren't in the business for health. They're in the business to sell phones. So it's really sad, you know, because there's, like the one gentleman said, there's hospitals that are being built all over the United States right now for the purpose of brain aneurysms, brain cancer, people are with strokes, people that are having more problems with blood clots, different things, and it's all caused because of the high-powered cell phones, of course, putting them up to the ears, the head, and doing different things like you had mentioned. And so, but there is ways getting around it, and it sounds wonderful that you are developing a company or maybe a service or a way to be able to actually to do a whole home, it sounds like. And see, to me, even if I know how to counteract it and what I can do to do these things, whatever is the quickest, fastest, best way, the most, has the most power for me, is what I want. And there might be something that I'm not even aware of. Like, for example, I'm very close to a dam, maybe about not even 2 blocks away. And when the kids from school go over there to look at the building where you walk through to go and look at this dam, they have to sign a release form because it's a nuclear plant type of thing. And they say that these children from school, when they go there for field trips, they have to have a release from their parents and from the people that, you know, the city or whoever owns the dam over there, so that they do not get injured or hurt or come back and sue them for walking through this nuclear plant by the dam. And so I don't know when the bad weather comes in, if that thing kicks in bigger and louder, and that's what is having more of an effect on me. I really don't know what it is. I'm trying to figure it out. But any help I could get from anybody, I'd appreciate it.
There's a book called The Ion Factor. It was
okay.
Written by Fred Soyka in the 60s. And the whole book is about weather and barometric pressure. What you were describing was my mother. My mother could tell you 3 days before it was going to rain because of the pressure she felt on her body. And when the clouds come in, it creates a huge barometric pressure on us that are in between the clouds and the ground. And if you have issues, whatever those issues might be, when the barometric pressure rises, it can triple and quadruple those issues. But the book is called The Ion Factor, Fred Soyka. I think it was published in 1963 or 64. He's from Canada. And you might be able to find a copy of that.
Would you be able to give Cheryl that information? I got Ion Factor and Fred, but I don't know how to spell Soyka.
S-O-Y-K-A. S as in Sam, O-Y-K-A. He's a relative of ours.
Well, how wonderful. And it sounds like you're walking in his footsteps, but I do know breathing helps. I do know that if you're balanced in your minerals and amino acids and vitamins in your body and the potassium and sodium level is balanced and you're in alignment, I know that, you know, if you drink a lot of water, but see, the thing is, if you're hydrated, and I drink sub-nano technology water from a quantum physicist that hydrates the body, so I'm like 75-80% hydrated, so then I notice and feel things more than other people because I'm so sensitive, and also I do a lot of energy work, and because my temple or my physical body, I try to keep it as pure and clean as possible, but then I am more susceptible to this electronic or electromagnetic smog, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, as well as smart meters, they in Orange County, they've been installing smart gas meters and smart water meters as well as smart parking meters. So we have
a much
bigger issue now.
Upper UP, and we don't have any smart meters yet, thank God.
You're so lucky.
But we do have cell phone towers, and I know if you put your computer, and I don't use computers either, and I don't have a cell phone. So, but anyway, if you put it in your computer, and my phone is a landline and it's grounded, so... But if you put it in your computer, antenna.com, I think it is, I found out within a mile around my house, this was about 10 years ago, there was 23 towers. And so, you know, since then, we're talking 10 years ago, I don't know how many cell phone towers or emergency system towers or, you know, those type of things are out there, but... You know they've multiplied like crazy.
Oh, we're probably under at least 24 different kinds of fields living in the inner cities, Los Angeles,
right. Not
Orange
to
County.
Mention tropical stressors, Hartman lines, ley lines, different things. And see, that's what I did with, I do a little L-rods and figure out where the ley lines and the water lines are, and I also... had a fence put around my yard, and so I had the gas company and the electric company and the telephone company and all the companies come in to show me where all these underground wires and lines were that might affect my body. And since I'm very close to the river, we actually have an underground current going about 6 feet down below our house that in the spring and the fall it runs more, and then our sump pump goes off. But the thing is, we have a little river going underneath our property, and even though we have no flooding or no wet basements or anything like that here, it still has that flow of energy going through the earth.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's a good thing.
Yes. But what I'm just saying is you have all different types of energy fields going in all different directions, whether they're good or bad, you know what I mean? You've got all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize about geographical stressors and stuff.
Indeed.
Well, we're running up on the end of our program. We have about 4 minutes left. And, Cookie, I'd love for you to do a proclamation for us, if you will.
I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll try to tune in again.
And thank you for all the wonderful information.
Yes, anytime. Thank you for doing the work. Great show.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye.
And we have Tim back with us.
Hello, Cheryl. I caught all that about the ley lines. That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, great. Yeah, I'm glad you made it back. Thank you so much for being here.
We need to talk more about ley lines. There's a lot of awesome powers associated with that we can work with.
Excellent. Well, we'll plan another program for that.
Look forward to it.
Okay. Are you ready for us?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing you, Cheryl.
Oh, I'm sorry. Cookie, are you ready to do a proclamation for us?
Yeah, I thought tonight the one that would be very, very good for us is called electronic devices. And you know, as being spiritual beings in a physical body, that if we say this proclamation, it blocks the energy fields of electronic devices around our body. And the way you can tell is that if you put a cell phone in your hand and you muscle test, your arm will drop. After you say this proclamation and you absorb it in your energy field in your body, what happens is now put the cell phone in your hand and your arm will be strong, showing that it no longer affects the physical body. How long does it last? As long as your belief system is, or what you put out in a proclamation. If you want it to last for 1 minute, if you want to last it for 1 day or 1 week or a month or for the period of time that you own that phone, you can also put a statement on it. It can protect others. So here's the proclamation, and if you don't want to be a part of it, just put your tongue to the roof of your mouth. From the divine love that flows within your being, I proclaim all disharmonic energies transmuted in any form, with or without my permission, be now transmuted into the divine expression of creative love and return to the Creator Source to be used only as a positive, productive energy. And so it is. Take a breath, exhale, and clap your hands. And the purpose taking a deep breath and exhaling is by saying, so be it, amen, or I agree with it, because we're taking in the breath of life and we brought in the Creator, who is the one that gives us the breath of life. By clapping your hands, you're taking the energy where it's going from a negative in a certain direction. By clapping your hand, it makes it pay attention, turn around, and go the opposite direction, which is a positive direction, and then it actually is enlightening, and it actually strengthens the body.
Well, thank you. We have to bail quickly. The Pleasure Saucer is up next, so we'll see you on Monday.